It's a pleasure to welcome back onto the Reasonably Smoker Show Annette Bunn from Rift Accounting.
Hello.
Hi, thank you so much for joining us,
Nettie.
Eventually, you know, for, you know, tearing yourself away from your desk and hopping
busy
over
girl,
here.
Busy girl.
Yeah. Mm. So how's things?
Things are very, very good. I'm very excited about today because today is not a sensible day on the radio, is it? Normally I bring guests.
Yeah, you would.
Clever people. But
and
today,
stuff like that.
I've been asked to interview you.
When you say you've been asked to interview me...
It was you who asked me.
No.
I was going to say,
there was no asking here. It was telling was seemed to be the order of the day.
Because it's funny and it's Christmas.
Yeah, right, okay.
And I've got some really good questions.
Have you?
For you.
I might need a lawyer. I've got a lawyer with me that says,
I'm sorry,
we can't comment at this time.
No, you'll be fine.
Okay.
You'll be absolutely fine. You just tell me when you're ready.
Okay. Yeah, I'm ready. Go on.
Okay, then. All right, let's start with an easy one. What do you want to do when you grow up?
I don't want to grow up.
I've got to say, yes, I don't understand the question.
Yeah, yeah. Why would I want to grow up?
Come on, answer the question.
I don't want to grow up. I'm not going to grow up. I'm Peter Pan. I'm going to live in Never Never Land forever.
Yeah, but you've been there a while now.
I know,
yeah,
and yeah, I'm quite happy.
There's
lots of possibilities to explore there, isn't
there? When you were younger,
yeah,
what did you want to do when you grew up?
Do you know what? I never had an ambition, and... when I was really,
that's
really young.
That's a really interesting answer. I like that. Go on.
Yeah, no, but when I was really, really young, my idea was I always wanted to join the army.
Okay.
And kill people and stuff.
Oh.
See foreign lands. And
yeah, exactly,
them.
And all that.
Okay.
And when it came time...
World War II had just finished.
No.
Before war.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
You will find this hard to believe.
Go on.
But when I first applied to join the army, at the medical, I was turned down because I was too short.
Really?
Too short of what?
Too short in height.
It's a use of exemption.
Wow.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I was 4'11".
Did you stand in a trench or something?
Nope, I was 4'11".
How old were you, 9?
15. No, I was 15.
Wow.
I was 4'11", and they said, you're too short. You've got to come back in a year when you've grown a couple of inches.
Mm.
And I grew a couple of inches. In fact, I grew a couple of feet in the next year because I'm now 6'2".
Mm.
But I never went back. And I thought, they had one chance, and they blew it.
So that explains the rest of your life then. The
exactly.
Fact you didn't go back
I've just been wandering around thinking, I don't know what to do now.
For the
next... 45 years, I've just wandered around going, no idea what to do.
No idea now. I wish I'd gone back to that second interview.
Yeah.
What would you have done? Army? RAF?
No. I was going to join the army.
Army. Sniper? Yeah.
No. I couldn't see over it. No.
Couldn't see over the
drink. Yeah. I actually applied to join a thing called the Junior Leaders Regiment, which was... at the time, I don't know if it still exists, it was a way of joining the army underage, but you went into a leadership program.
Oh.
And so you did 3 years from age 15 to 18, and then you could either leave or you joined a full regiment and you were assigned a regiment. But it was a fast track to becoming an NCO.
Oh, very good. It's become a little bit sensible on the answer now, so I'm going to go on to
another question. That was boring. I didn't. I was too short, so they didn't let me in.
All right. Most memorable...
There's a history of short corporals as well. That isn't very good.
Let's not go there.
Yeah.
Most memorable guest for 2016?
Oh, blimey.
Whoa.
Oh, blimey. Ken and Paul.
Clearly.
Well said.
Most memorable guest for...
Mm.
Do you know, my memory's gone at my age. Busily trying to think of all
you've
the people.
You've had some brilliant guests.
We've had loads and loads of brilliant guests.
Come on.
I'm just trying to think.
We've had some memorable then.
No. But we just had some really mad. It all depends what you mean by memorable, because we've had some really mad times on some of the shows.
It normally means the one you can remember.
No pressure with the clock.
That's a really hard question. It's a brilliant question, but there's just been so many.
I mean, looking back on some of the guests that I've brought this year, I would say one of the funniest shows we had was Mike. because he was so terrified.
Yeah, he was terrified.
Hilarious. And I hope he's listening. If not, I will send him this bit.
But the thing is, I happen to know that Mike, when he came on, was really nervous about doing a show.
Yeah.
And he kept saying, oh, I don't know this. And we did the show. And ever since, he's been sending the podcast everywhere. And every 10 minutes, I still get somebody listening to Mike. And I'm going, he sent that again, hasn't he? He sent it. I was on the radio.
And the other one for me was Matt.
Matt Velvey. Yeah.
Also partly because girls started tweeting him after the show because he's a young lad, very good looking, very entrepreneurial.
I'm expecting that. And the reason why I'm here.
Yep.
The group is.
Yep. Go with it.
Well, the funny thing is, I bumped into Matt without recognising him in the summer.
Yeah.
At Eureka Park, and he was driving his new car, which was a soft top Audi R8 V12.
Ooh,
and
nice.
He beeped at me, and I was so intent on looking at the car, I didn't realise it was him in it. And later on, he tweeted me, and he went, oh, I'm really sorry. He said, you obviously didn't recognise me. It was me that that beeped you earlier. And I went, no, well, I wasn't looking at you. I was looking at the car.
Oh, bless him. Okay, let's have something else then. What's your favourite thing about presenting a radio show?
The guests.
The ones you don't remember or the ones...
Yeah, all the ones I don't remember. The fade into obscurity. No.
Yeah?
No, it's good fun. Yeah, it's good fun and the guests are really brilliant. And... being serious for a moment, one of the great things about doing this is you learn loads and loads of stuff about things because you have loads of people that are experts in their own field that are very knowledgeable about what they're doing and they come along and tell us and a little bit of each of that kind of seeps in there somewhere and it enables me when I'm out and about to sound like I know what the hell I'm talking about things. I go, I'll auto-enroll you. Do you want a car as well, you know? So I do your accounts.
Yeah.
And that is one of the great things of doing something like this is you meet so many great people that really do know a lot about their field and it all kind of rubs off a bit.
Yeah. I mean, this year we've made a real point, I think both of us, Paul, of bringing guests on that people don't know about all the time. Yeah. I mean, it's great to bring people that have been a number of times and I've loved bringing some of our guests that have been before. But another one that I've just thought that we really enjoyed was Nadine, who did the Forces Families.
Absolutely.
She looks after, going back to your army reference,
absolutely.
Actually looks after those Forces Families, the way that their finances work, what they do. She was really interesting as well because it's the same thing.
Absolutely.
Just the audience is different and they have a different set of things they need to look at.
Absolutely. And we've met lots of people that are just at the start of their business career, just launched businesses and are kind of scrabbling around as we all did when we launched our first business, so trying to find out how to do it, how to make a living while you haven't got any customers and all that kind of tough stuff that you do. And it's really great. And I've met loads and loads of those over the year. This is the 9th year of the Business Bunker Show. So over 9 years, we've met loads and loads of people doing that. And some of those have come back on in subsequent years and have been really successful businesses.
Yeah.
And we first met them when in the early weeks of them starting up, which is also lovely.
When they were still looking terrified.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, what's the most famous person you've had on the radio? It's like I planned this.
Yeah. Well, do you mean on the Bunker Show or
it
on Channel Radio?
Yeah, it can be either.
Probably the best known people that we've had on the Bunker Show from a business point of view was Richard Farley, who was one of the original Dragon's Den. We've had Gerald Ratner.
Yeah.
And that was a really poignant interview. For those of you that may or may not remember, Gerald Ratner owned a chain of jewellery stores.
Or after his speech.
This was after his speech.
Woo.
Yeah. Yeah. And he made a very famous speech which basically ruined a £500 million business. And Gerald came on the
show.
Did
he say something like, all the stuff we sell in our shop is
rubbish?
How
come your food is so cheap, it's crap?
And his business folded almost overnight. Gerald came on the show about three or four years after that had happened. And he was very contrite. He was very humble. He was incredibly emotional about it. But he had started to recover and build a new business.
Wow.
And he actually built a jewellery business in India.
Oh, right, okay.
Good place for it.
Yeah, and was doing rather well.
Yeah,
again. But he was still very humble about the mistake that he'd made and very sad about the trouble that it caused, not just him, but
it's a ripple effect, isn't it?
Yeah, everybody that worked for the business.
Yeah.
But a lovely, lovely man. And, you know, it shows you that any of us can make a mistake.
Yeah, definitely.
That was a pretty fundamental one, though, wasn't it?
It was. If you're going to make it biggie.
Telling the UK population
your chain of jewellers
that your product is absolute rubbish and you shouldn't buy it.
Yeah. Obviously, an obvious question: who's your favourite sponsor?
Oh, Rift Accounting.
Brilliant. Good answer.
Supply my business.
Thank you, Paul.
Well, the guy with the worn-out car and the half of glasses.
Yeah, well, we'd be sorry for him.
As long as he comes second, that's fine. Okay, what was your first car?
My first car was a Hillman Imp.
Ooh. Commodore Climax engine. Nice.
Yeah. It was.
Sorry, a what? What colour was it?
Oh, what a girly question.
Yeah, it was blue. Ah. I got to tell you, it was
what a model. Was it stiletto?
No. It was an awful car. It was the worst experience ever.
Really?
Overheat a lot.
I had passed my test the week before. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I bought the car.
How much?
It was about 80 quid or something.
Excellent, yeah.
And I bought the car from someone in Slough.
Oh.
Okay. Nice. And I got the train to Slough to collect the car.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked the car up and I drove it back for the first time driving on my own, right, up the M4, over the Hammersmith flyover,
nice,
into central London, round Marble Arch and out onto the A20.
Well, the good news was it was still going.
No, it didn't. It didn't.
Was this like over 3 or 4 days?
It took me 11 hours to get home. The car overheated every 2 miles.
I think I asked that question,
and,
didn't I?
And I broke down on the Hammersmith flyover and caused a huge traffic jam.
Excellent.
And a panda car, if you remember such things, which was also a Hillman Imp,
was it?
Turned up and went, "That'll overheat all the way home." Cheers, thanks for that.
Yes. So needless to say, you didn't have another one of those then?
I didn't.
No. How long did you keep it for after
about
that?
About a week.
Yeah. Sounds about right. Okay, favourite song?
My favourite song? Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow. The theme tune to this show.
Yeah, okay.
I'm a big Fleetwood Mac fan, and the words of that song just sum up everything for me. It's... You know, you always think to the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very deep, Mr. Andrews, very deep. Okay, apart from Christmas, last gift you bought?
Last gift? Mm. But not a Christmas-related one.
Mm-hmm.
When you say not Christmas, I bought a gift on Saturday.
Is it for Christmas?
Oh, kind of, I suppose.
Well,
it was.
The answer's
yes,
right.
I suppose it was.
Well, then.
Your pre-Christmas, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So the last gift before that would have been a birthday present for someone, I guess. I'm trying to think which of my family had their birthday last. Would have been Steve.
Do you actually buy gifts or do you give money?
Yeah. It depends. What I tend to do is the kids especially, they go, "Don't buy me clothes, don't buy me that, don't buy me that, your taste
you've
is rubbish."
No taste, you won't
you've got no
that.
Taste, you won't know, you
As
won't get
parent,
that right.
Yeah. You know, I know there is no point. I might get socks right.
Yeah.
I might.
Yeah.
Spend.
So that's what I do.
Yeah.
I normally give them money and then a couple of small, you know, like a sock each. Or
with an orange in it.
With an orange in it, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, one last question then. Yeah. But this is a little bit of a dilemma, so we could all probably answer this one. Okay, Paul, picture the scene. You've got to picture the scene, right? You've just leaving my office after a meeting.
I thought you weren't going to mention that.
I've left.
I say.
Picture the scene. Yeah. Don't talk, just picture the scene. Okay, so we finished a meeting in my office. I'm just letting you out of the secure doors at the top of the stairs. You start walking down the stairs and you pick up a lottery ticket.
Mm-hmm.
You take it down the road and it's worth £10 million.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do? Martin, what would you do?
What?
You found it on the stairs.
Oh, I found it, so
you
it's not mine.
It, it's not yours. You found it. You've picked it up. You've taken it down the road. It's worth £10 million. What would you do?
I'd leave a pound on the floor.
there's a couple of issues here because...
Do you know, this is in the top 10 good questions to ask on a radio show. I Googled it.
Yeah, I did too. Because I do believe that
finders keepers?
No, but I think they can tell where the ticket was bought.
Yeah.
Now, they probably can't tell who bought it, but they can tell where it was bought. So it depends on who dropped it and where it was. And if you tried to cash it, and it was bought in like Nottingham, and you tried to cash it in Kent, they might know anyway. What would I do? I think I'd probably try and claim the money. Probably.
If only you could see the horrid look on my face.
No, no, not because I need the money, because I don't need the money, but I probably can't claim it and then do something with it.
Okay. What would you do with it?
I'll give it all to charity, obviously.
Really?
So you wouldn't even spend some on me?
No. Why would I do that?
Not even a decent Michael Kors handbag or
no,
something.
Why would I do that?
10 million is a lot of money, isn't
it's
it?
It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Go on, Martin, what would you do? Obviously, you wouldn't buy a new car.
Well,
that's the last thing he'd buy.
The one he's got into trust.
I was just going to say.
To a museum.
The one my mate's got sitting in a field that he continually strips
apart. He'd rebuild it.
I'd buy it off him.
Yeah.
Or buy the field.
Yeah. It's a really tough one, isn't it? I mean,
it's the moral bit.
Well,
moral,
I mean, moral stuff aside, you know, what would anybody else do, you know, with that amount of money? Have a nice holiday.
That's a pretty nice good house. Holiday, isn't it? 10 million.
Yeah. It's not actually that much money these days, is it? 10 million quid.
Oh, you know, I'd have it.
I mean, it's, you know, if you're going to retire quite young, you know, you do have to manage it, wouldn't you? You'd need someone like Ken to take that money and actually invest it for you in a pension so that you to make sure you had enough to last you for the rest of your life.
It's all relative, isn't it? Because it depends on what your age you are, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And your ambitions, you know. If you don't mind about a new car and stuff like that, then it'll last longer, won't it?
Some things are more important in life, aren't they?
Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah. Well, not to you, obviously. But really? Not to you and Nettie.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit vaguely on this one.
What would you get then, Nettie?
What, with 10 million?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, the first thing I'd be doing is going around the office to find out whose lottery ticket it is and seeing if I could go halves. Yes.
I was going
to
say, we're all accepted that we're spending it.
I would definitely do quite a lot of it for charity, most definitely. But I would have a nice car, a nice holiday, and then somewhere nice to.
Are we getting some tweets about this?
Yeah, a lot of work for Terry, mate. Don't like to talk about it too much.
Yeah. Yeah, I would enjoy some of it, but I would have to give some of it away.
That's too altruistic, doesn't it?
Yes.
I'll get a new flip-top pedal bin for the kitchen.
Would you?
I've got some rubbish one, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll also get those little rubber things that your grandma used to have on the end of taps that you could point the water everywhere.
Seriously, you should get
I'm going to be a little bit vague here.
Go on.
Because people that know me might know this story, but this is a true story.
Okay.
About 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
I had a company and we employed at that time about 40 or 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the people that worked there had been with us almost since day one.
Mm-hmm.
And a lovely person. And I knew them and their family quite well. Early one Thursday morning, about 5 a.m, my phone rang, and it was the lady involved, and she was absolutely in bits. She was crying. She was, oh, my God. Oh, my God. I need help. I need help. And I went, where's your husband? And she said, he's working away. He's in Amsterdam at the moment, and he doesn't know what's happened to me, and I need your help quickly. Oh, my God. So I got in the car, and I drove to her house, and I walked in, and she was absolutely in bits. And I said, what's the matter? And she went, look. And she held up a piece of paper. And she showed it to me. And it was her winning ticket on the lottery. And she won 5 million quid.
Wow.
And she just didn't know what to do. She was just completely in bits. Anyway.
And she asked you. She really was in bits. Yeah. Yeah.
Get a new car. Get another one.
Yeah. So I said, well, look, let's get hold of your husband. So I rang him and I said, when are you back? Well, tomorrow. Okay, well, you need to come back. There's some news that you need to hear, and it's really good news. Anyway, so he came back, and they came to my house, and they'd already been to Camelot, and Camelot had given them a lot of advice about what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to my house, and they said, we're made for life. And I went, this is what reminded me of this story is what you just said.
Mm.
And I said, £5 million won't serve you for the rest of your life. Trust me on this. Mm. They're both in their early 30s, very young children. And I said, what are you going to do? And they go, we're going to send the kids to private school. We're going to buy a new house. We're going to buy new cars.
Oh, yeah.
And I went, you're going to have no money left.
There's nothing there now. Yeah.
And I said, the one thing to not do is to walk into work, either my place or where your husband works, and chuck your job in. Mm. And they went, oh, why? Well, one, you can't afford it.
Yeah.
Trust me on this. And two, everybody's going to go, hold on, why have you suddenly given up work?
Yeah.
What they actually did is they went out, they bought a £1 million house. Mm-hmm. They bought two brand new cars. They put their kids into private school.
Yeah.
They actually bought a chain of houses, a whole street in Oldham. They bought eight houses in one street in Oldham. And they eventually, and then everybody, and they both quit their jobs. And everybody went, you've won the lottery, haven't you? And then they got inundated with begging letters.
Yeah.
It got so bad that eventually they emigrated to Australia.
Wow.
To get away from it all. And they had to start again because £5 million for someone in their 30s was never going to see them through the rest of their life, especially when you're spending it like a drunken sailor.
Well, half of it's gone when you're just
putting
that. Well,
the thing that people don't realise about money is that it buys a lifestyle, but you have to sustain the lifestyle.
You do.
Yeah. You buy £1 million house, that's a G-band tax
you've
band
got to,
for
you've
a start.
You've got to run it, haven't you?
You've got to run it.
You've got to run it.
Exactly.
You've got to pay the heating bills. You've got to pay the rates. You've got to pay...
And that's without the gardener and the butler and the
exactly.
housekeeper.
And people don't realise that. And then, you know, sticking your kids in private schools, they're expensive and so on and so forth.
It's got to be sustainable.
Yeah. There's some fascinating stuff about people that win a lot of money.
Mm.
And it's normally... The people that do best are the people that have already got money.
Mm. See, all that story lacked was Simon Bates' music.
Yeah.
Oh, and a tune.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it would have been job done,
perfectly.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah. I'd like to ask him a question, actually, before you sign off.
I've got one more, but go on.
So, Paul, what's been your proudest moment in business this year? What are you most proud of on a kind of business level?
Been reading.
Is that your question?
Best thing about 2016 was my last question.
From a business point of view?
Yes.
No, I don't care whether it's business or private.
Well, I'd like to know from a business point of view, what's been the highlight of your year?
I guess that's a difficult question. I own 9 businesses. So.
Good you Lord. Did.
Blimey.
Can we have... Right. Let's stop drinking.
Well, actually, answer the question for me, because out of all the things that I've done this year, the most salient... Well, it's been two. Can I have two?
Yeah, we both asked.
Yeah. So I'll answer each of you. One. First and foremost is expanding Fruitworks, which has been both good and bad.
Yeah.
I'm really proud that we did it. I'm really proud of the work that Jamie... my son did to refurbish the building. It's been an absolutely phenomenal job. I'm not too chuffed with Canterbury City Council and their continual...
Hang on, have you mentioned that before?
Yeah.
Well, it's an ongoing
cycle. One and nine times, yeah.
Hmm.
But overall, running a community workspace isn't the most lucrative thing I do in the world, but it's very satisfying.
Yeah.
So that's answering Nettie.
Okay.
Answering Martin was building the second studio for Channel Radio. So we have two studios, Dimchurch and this one here in Ashford, that we built in 2016. This one we built in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And on a personal level, maybe we ought to mention your son got married.
I've had, from a personal point of view, it's been a really brilliant year.
Yeah.
I had loads of things. My oldest son got married. My youngest son graduated and got a job. He's a foreign exchange trader.
Cool.
And he has just been offered a part in Made in Chelsea.
Has he really? Fabulous.
Yeah.
Made in Chelsea.
Yeah.
He'll be one of my daughter's new best friends.
Yeah, he's like Tower. Yeah. So at the moment, he's saying, I'm not doing that.
He's got to do it.
Yeah, I said, do it. But anyway.
Mm.
Personally, it's been a really great year as far as the kids are concerned. Mm. And we're top of the league. 6 points clear.
And you're going on Boxing Day, aren't you?
I am going on Boxing Day.
Is this football
or something?
Yeah.
Sorry, wake me up when you're over.
I don't think I need to know about that. No.
Right.
There you go, Paul. They were my questions.
Thank you, Nettie.
You are very welcome. It's my pleasure.
Yeah.
See, I rock up, take over.
Mm. It's interesting, and they're really good questions because they do make you think. And They're really difficult questions to answer, really. I don't tend to dwell on things. And at my age, my memory's going as well, which doesn't help. So
another thing, at your age, your memory's going.
Do you know, somebody said that to me the other day.
Did they?
Yeah, I can't remember who it was. No. I don't know.
It's a cracker.
So.
There you go. They were my questions.
Thank you, Nettie.
You can ask me a question.
I was just about to.
I thought you were. I could tell.
Yeah,
go on,
yeah,
then. I may not answer it. Go on.
Oh.
I said you could ask it.
So just turning the tables on you very quick. So for you, what's been the highlight of your year?
Business-wise? We've really picked Rift Accounting up this year and changed what we're doing. Mm. We've sort of looked at it. It's quite interesting because working for an established company like Rift, but having a part of Rift Accounting, which is actually really a startup, we're 2 years old, we've grown quickly, and we haven't got everything perfect, but we've really looked at how the model works in the last 6 months. We've done an awful lot of work on it, and what I've really loved is actually working with the clients on that. You know, tell me what you want.
Yeah.
Bit of a Spice Girl moment there, but, you know, tell me what you want.
No, what you really want.
Yeah. And then looking at how we can adapt the model, because we've always made a point of being non-traditional accountants. You know, we do the traditional things.
They don't add up, basically.
Can't.
I get it.
But it's been really lovely actually talking to customers and really understanding what they want. So very much like you, you know, it's not the stuff that will make me rich, but it is the stuff that will help me attract more clients and also retain the clients that we've got. And that's what's important, and grow with them.
Absolutely. I'm pleased you said that. And it's one of the things that I find myself arguing with people about on social media and stuff like that, especially left-wing snowflakes. a bit of a giveaway now. It's my experience as a business person, and I know thousands and thousands of business people, and I know very few of them that do what they do purely for the money. Very few of them do that. There's all kinds of other reasons why people run a business.
Yep.
There's all kinds of motivations by people that run businesses. But most of all, they're just normal human beings that have the same emotions, the same cares, the same thoughts, the same feelings about society as anybody else.
Yep.
And they will contribute where they can in ways that they can, whether that is by donating money to charity or, more importantly, by helping people in voluntary basis and stuff like that. And I know thousands of business people that do that. Yet we got this thing, and I read a really sad blog the other day. And it was sad because it was true. And it was written in an American magazine. And it just was titled, "Why Do Brits Hate Success?" And it was why do British people put down people that are successful? Why do they not celebrate business people? What is it about the psyche in our country that makes it...
It's a like really that? Interesting one, because I remember, this is a few years ago, but... A comment that was made that I just remember it because it was so true but so ridiculous, in that if you are a business owner, and actually this is a car thing, we seem to have a car theme today, but if you're a business owner and you have a new car, it's all right for you because you've got your own business. But if you're a salesman in a company and you get a new company car, you're doing well. And it's this thing that if you run a business, it's all right for you. It's easy, you know, it's the easiest thing in the world. You can have a new car, you can do this, you can do that, all the holidays you want, whatever. It's this jealousy perception. I don't know what it is, but it drives me nuts.
I don't know if this is true or not. I don't know if it was apocryphal, but I heard a story once about a guy that had been very successful, and he bought himself a Ferrari, okay? And the first day he parked it on the road, somebody keyed it. And he heard a bunch of people sitting there going, "Oh, rich wife." A couple of days later, he went to park the car, and there was a bunch of people standing there, and he thought, "I don't know how to look at this." And he got out of the car, and they all looked at him, and he went, "Won the lottery." And they went, "Oh, nice one, mate. Yeah, well done. Crazy." Yeah. Yeah, so your ability to pick six numbers at random is fine.
Well done.
Yeah. Your ability to run a multinational corporation.
Forget it, you're evil.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a friend with a Ferrari as well, 458, and he can't drive into town because he just gets jealous comments, he gets spat at. And
exactly.
And I find that really sad because a lot of really good, successful business people, they don't work a 9-till-5 day. They work all the hours there are, they are very committed to what they
do. Well, apart from Martin, of course, he spends his life in a slope off Friday.
Slope off Friday in the garage.
But you mentioned the Americans looking at the British entrepreneurs. I think there's a different mindset. I think amongst British business people and business owners, we don't want to be billionaires. Okay, we want to be successful, but it's not about making $1 billion. It's not about being the next Facebook or the next Twitter or LinkedIn or whatever it is. And I think the exit strategy, therefore, is often a lot more realistic and a lot more modest.
But that's business people's view. What I'm talking about is non-business people's views of business people. And that's where we go wrong here, where we don't celebrate the success. Yeah. It doesn't matter whether you end up with a $1 billion corporation or a £1 million corporation, as far as I'm concerned, because I don't think business people on the whole go into business just for the money anyway.
No.
You need to make a living, and it's nice to have nice things. But at the end of the day, almost everybody I know that went into business didn't do that. In the US, there are some people that set out to be billionaires because you can set out to be a billionaire and it's perfectly doable.
You end up like Trump.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what, president?
Yeah, president. It's not popular, though.
But for me, it's not so much the motivation, it's everybody else's perception of what it is you're trying to do. And, you know, there's 5.6 million businesses in this country.
And we're a nation of shopkeepers. We are a nation of small businesses. That is the biggest percentage. Yeah. And looking after those people and getting that right and offering that right support is what's really all
about. There are some very poor role models out there, aren't there?
Of course, which
don't help.
Yeah, of course.
So you've got your Philip Greens of the world, people like that.
But that's entirely why I started this program.
With their 100 million pound yachts.
Yeah, but that's entirely why I started this program. There are 5.6 million businesses, and all we talk about is one.
Yeah.
Yeah, Philip Green.
Yeah.
What about the other, you know, 5.599, you know?
No, but if you drive around in a Rolls Royce or a flash car, or you have an expensive yacht, that's going to be the perception, isn't it? That, you know, invariably at some point along the line, you've done something that hasn't helped other people necessarily.
You're clearly a crook.
It's a perception thing.
Yeah. That's exactly my point. Is that too many people in our society, their perception's wrong. They think you're a crook just because you're successful. And that's entirely the point. That how can you aspire if everybody then assumes you're a crook because if you succeed, you must have ripped somebody off.
There's nothing wrong with success, but, you know, don't drive a Ferrari.
Why?
Why shouldn't you? Because people are going to have a bad opinion of you.
But they shouldn't have.
But that's the whole point.
But the reality is they do, Paul.
No, but the reality
And it
is,
will get keyed, and you can't drive it and park it in the Safeway.
I wouldn't, because they break down too much.
The reality is, in every other country in the world, it's fine. It's only here that our perception exists. And, you know, people want jobs. If you want a job, you've got to have someone that's going to own a Ferrari or a, you know, a big house in the country or whatever.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they haven't got a business that's going to employ you. Anyway, we're fast running out of time with that. So thank you for that, Nettie.
You are very welcome.
And what we're going to do now, Martin, is... who's actually really my favourite. And, of course, a massive thank you to Martin's car for taking a starring role in this show, and we've now discovered why he doesn't like cars as well.
If anybody would like to make me an offer, it's an ostentatious symbol.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, a pointless thing.
Yeah, Martin, thank you so much for that. Hey, listen, we'll be back with you next week. Have a fabulous Christmas, everybody, and we'll see you soon. Cheers now.
Happy Christmas.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.